Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them. Disrespect introduces Lana Bogart, an old-time activist, as she calls herself, with ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. And Lana's had an audience with Madeleine Meilleur, the Minister of Community and Social Services, and taken part in a demonstration at Madeleine Meilleur's office in Ottawa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think OCAP had decided that they were going to have province-wide demonstrations on the 20th.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't really heard too much about what's going on elsewhere, but they staged a demonstration outside of Madeleine Meilleur's office yesterday. And I'd say there were about 50 people there.
Okay.
Now, somebody filmed it. I'm not sure if it was CTV or CBC, but one of them was there.
Okay.
And there were a lot of people in wheelchairs. It was
a sad
gathering, but they were all very upset about losing money from their special diet.
Mm-hmm.
They were diabetics and so on. Not that easy to live on. It's like, do I pay rent or do I eat?
Kind of. Or do I spend my day making the rounds of the hot meal programs and food banks?
Exactly.
And that's not much of a life. You look at the people who sit on the verandas of care homes, and it's basically the same kind of thing. You have no discretionary income, only they have their needs met.
Yeah.
Presumably, some of them do, and you don't have even your basic needs met. You have to go around and shuffle around all day for that stuff.
Yeah. I know, it's basically almost like pets.
Pets.
Yeah. Well, there was they were talking about creating some sort of a food supplement. Sounded like Purina People Chow, because it was going to be just like kibble, and people couldn't eat it instead of meals.
Who was talking about that? Mayor?
I can't remember. This is when the Conservatives were first cutting back on all these special programs. It was 95.
Soylent Green.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know what other substance there is they could give you instead of food,
Oh, my goodness.
I know, it's, it sort of takes...
I understand the federal point of view is different. You might not have had experience with this, but what I've been told by government officials working with the feds is that we need an increase in workers able to take up the tax load to avoid a future deficit position because of the people my age and your age, people who are in the baby boom, who are going to retire and have entitlements that can't be denied. And the feds are hoping to bring disabled people into the economy. It seems the Ontarians are, the Ontario government has got the opposite point of view. It's like cut them out, shut them down, lock them away, and if possible, make them sick and kill them off early.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, what their philosophy is anymore at this point.
I can give you an insight. I've said this before on the radio. I think it looks good on the Liberals, though, so I'll say it again. Before the election in which McGuinty came to power, I happened upon someone who claimed to be a Liberal campaign organizer on the GO train.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about social benefits and the level of benefits. As at that time, they'd only been stagnant for about 10 years as opposed to 17 now. And they declined for about 10 years. And I said, it's getting hard to live on these benefits. And he said, you've got enough for a roof over your head and Kraft dinner. What more do you want? And I thought, my God, if someone said that to you, you'd knock their teeth out.
I know, really.
Yeah.
I know, well, if you don't have your basic needs met, it's very hard to concentrate on anything else. So that's why you have the people running around trying to find their next meal and so on.
Well, and food banks tightening up the qualifications already.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it going to be like when people are $250 more short?
I don't know.
No, well, that's the grocery bill and then some. We're going to have a problem with credit, too. We need a place where people can go. One place, not a federal regulator and a provincial regulator, and in the case of third-party collections, no regulator. And they can get these people off their back for money that they can't afford to pay in any case, because they have to eat and they have to stay sheltered. And they need a place like that in Ontario. And they don't have such a thing. If you call Consumer Services and talk to them, they'll give you a story about, and it's probably true, that certain institutions are regulated by the province, certain institutions are regulated by the feds, and certain institutions are hardly regulated at all. You need to know who's got your debt. Yeah. And then you need to apply to the appropriate regulator, who will tell you to have to start at the bottom and work your way up to get any help. While these people call you and ask why, with a cupboard, if you're lucky, full of food bank beans, why you're not paying the debt that would have been payable 18 years ago, had your income not declined every year since then.
Yeah. See, the thing with ODSB is they make you spend all your money before, you know, like if you get sick.
Yeah.
And you can't go out and earn a living, while you have to go through everything.
Mm-hmm.
Before you can get put on ODSB.
Well, I never thought of that. If you start on Workfare, you have to, your resources
no,
have to be exhausted.
I had things. I had a car. I had all kinds of stuff, you know, but they just kept it dangling until it was all spent. I had to spend it.
Well, if you start on Workfare, you face the same restrictions for assets and income as somebody who is merely unemployed. And if you're disabled, that's not fair.
Exactly. Well, that's what, you know, like, I've had a variety of jobs in my lifetime, and I know a lot of other people have had, and, you know, if things go wrong as you get older, that doesn't mean you should live in a kind of a subhuman way, and there's no way you could save up or anything, because you had to go through your savings, you know, they just...
I never saw that before, how unfair starting with Workfare is.
Yeah, so you basically start with zero in the bank, and no car, no nothing. What are they giving people, $500 a month now, $535 or something?
I think it's higher, but it's still well under $600 a month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, you can't even get a place to live, you know, with that whole thing, probably.
Got
you get a bus pass, that's another...
$90 in Hamilton. I don't know what it is in Ottawa. What is it?
Well, we get the special rate, so we are lucky. We pay $31.
In Hamilton, you only get a special rate if you work.
Oh, no, we get a special rate for being on ODSB.
If you can't work, you pay the same as the dentist, the doctor, or the lawyer, or their assistant who takes the bus every day downtown.
That's
and
ridiculous.
Wears a suit and maybe has a BMW at home and just wants to save money. But you pay the same rate.
Actually, what I had started to say earlier, I saw a movie... Poor No More.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they compared some jobs here to those in Sweden of the poorest workers, for example, the ones that are working for the LCBOs and they're all part-time, even though they put in more than 40 hours and they're on minimum wage and so on.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know the LCBO were so cheesy with money.
Yeah, they were. Actually, in that movie, Mary Bradley tries to speak to the person in charge, and he basically throws her out of his office on camera.
Okay.
So, but the ones in Norway or Sweden, I guess, they had the 40-hour, actually it was like a 38-hour work week, but they were all full-time with benefits. Their
mm-hmm.
wages basically worked out to something like $20 an hour or
mm-hmm.
something.
You'd need that in Norway.
Yeah.
You practically need that here.
Well, yeah, the living wage campaign that Acorn's been running, it's basically goes from the Stats Canada information about how, you know, what the living basis should be in every city.
And mm-hmm.
to live like a normal life in Ottawa, i.e. you're not eating at food banks or shelters, but,
right.
you know, you're paying your own rent and everything else. You have to make, I believe, something like $13.75 an hour, and that's
right.
just to be poor. But to be poor so you can support yourself to a certain degree.
Okay.
You know, because there are an awful lot of working poor who end up at food banks and all kinds of places simply because, even though they're putting in a 40-hour work week, you know, they don't make enough to pay for everything that they need, so they either have to get another job or they have to try to get, you know, free stuff somehow.
There are a lot of working poor who have had their hours cut. They might be nominally full-time, but they might be working 28 hours, too.
Right.
And that really drives your needs up.
Exactly.
And sends you to places like food banks where they'll often say, well, you know, you're working, you're not poor, get out of here, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then the only option is to like go work and go begging. I don't know.
Yeah.
There isn't an option. That's
like
the problem.
In France too, when the banks failed, what they did was they shored up their social programs first. In other words, people who were on unemployment, people who were basically the neediest people, they immediately gave them a raise as opposed to giving the banks a big bailout. And what happened was these people spend money. I mean,
yeah.
Because they need to, you know.
Yeah.
It's not an option as to whether it's going to get spent.
So it's an injection directly into the economy.
So it goes right into the economy, and then they worry about the rest of them, but they don't have to worry about people sleeping in the streets and stuff.
What happened in Queen's Park? You went to talk to these people to present the case. Yeah.
It was just like at 8:15 in the morning. I'm hoping we wouldn't show up.
Yeah.
You know, and she was flanked by several assistants.
Really?
Yeah, she came in. I think there were about 5 people with her.
Okay.
But what really amazed me was this lady was from this riding. There must have been about 8 of us there.
Mm-hmm.
That are very possibly not only just voters, but chances are active ones, the kind
oh, yeah.
that get votes out.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
She wouldn't even meet our eyes. She
really?
At us like we were pieces of garbage. I mean, I don't know if she's like that with everybody. It was just the tone, the look. I mean, I've been around politicians enough to know that even if I don't agree with them, they usually try to bring you around to their, you know, point of view and try to be ingratiating, especially when it's an election year. So, I mean, these are people from her area, from Ottawa, from
right.
Bagnier, you know.
Right.
I mean, you'd think that as a politician, she'd try to be sort of ingratiating and doesn't have to agree with anything we said, but, you know, do it in a different way. She basically told us that, you know, she would never support the special diet being brought back in, and that we could become another Greece because of people like us, quote-unquote.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess she blames all the Greece bank problems on so their social programs, I guess.
Well, it seems to be their civil servants, so maybe it's Madeleine Neer that will bring us back to being another Greece with her indexed pension
exactly.
and all that.
But well, was that the special diet, too? It wasn't, for example, I personally get $77 a month on a special diet.
Right.
For a variety of ailments. And the thing is, it's not that you can get special diet, i.e. buy more things with calcium or potassium or whatever.
Right.
But it's a matter of whether you're going to have a diet consisting of food, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
they don't seem to accept that
no,
they're not giving out enough money, despite the fact doctors are telling them all over the province.
Well, exactly. There's this feeling like they're waiting for you to die off. And
it must be unpleasant.
Well, she's also the co-chair of the Treasury Board, and they're all about, you know, fixing the deficit. Now, to me, this seems almost like a conflict of interest, because social services is basically a deficit-making kind of ministry. You know, you're not going to make a profit on social services.
Right.
But it's still a necessary part.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to balance the budget in Ontario on the backs of the most disadvantaged people.
Yeah, and there isn't anything to take from them.
I mean, exactly. You know, if these are the people you're going to cut back on, then, you know, you're really in trouble.
Yeah.
Because they don't have anything to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as scam artists, you know, like, you'd have to be a really stupid scam artist to decide your scam would be to be on ODSB or something. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
You have to jump through so many hoops, and then for what? So you can live at subsistence level, you know. Well, there got to be better scams than that.
So Madeleine Neer, basically, she condescended to you, is what you would say.
I found her very condescending. She, when we brought up the various problems, she just was very cold and said, absolutely not. She's not even going to address them. You know, that basically people like us will have to learn how to take care of ourselves.
Really?
You know, yeah, it was like people like you kind of attitude, and she said the words. So I don't know, you know, she may not be at her best in the morning, but really, you know, she's a politician. I mean, I've been around politicians. They know how to...
Now, if she isn't at her best, you wouldn't schedule public meetings in the morning.
No.
Yeah,
if she's wise. And then she kind of walked out. Well, she came in a little late, and then she walked out, I think it was about 10 to 9. Mm-hmm. She said she had another meeting at 9, so it was about a half an hour we had with her.
All right.
And mostly it was the assistants that were asking questions.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What questions were they asking?
Well, we had a fact sheet, you know, for the cost of poverty and housing and so on. And we were giving them our requests, basically things that we would like to see addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of them would ask us questions about it. Now, Madeline Mayor, we asked her if she would just check off, date this and sign this, that she's read this, mm-hmm. while we read it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she refused. The other politicians did sign.
Yeah.
But she said, no, I don't sign things. You know, that was it.
Wow.
You know, just very dismissive. I mean, she, like, handing her something to sign, I mean, she didn't even look at it, like, what's this, or, you know, it was just automatically dismissed. I mean, I know they had signs out there yesterday calling her Madeline Antoinette.
Oh, okay.
Let them eat cake.
Yeah.
Although I don't think she actually said that, but...
Well, we know what happened to Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's an election coming up, so
it
doesn't have to happen, literally, to end the problem with Madeline Mayer.
Yeah. We saw Yasser Naqvi, and he was so nice and so friendly and everything.
Who's he?
Yasser Naqvi.
Yep.
He's a liberal for, I guess, Ottawa Centers. He basically ran for the Liberals because it was a little more politics. But he signed everything. He wanted pictures taken with us. He came running up to us on the steps.
Wow.
You know, whereas with Madeline, it was like pulling teeth. We had to get through security. We had to give a list of our names, you know.
Taking time for a small break now, Henry Gray comes in with his piano, How Could You Do It?
Got something to tell you, woman, you can't do. You can't love me, my buddy, do to me. How can you do it? Tell me why did you do it, girl? Tell me how can you do it, love? Treat me the way. Yes, I love you, girl, but I did myself. I wouldn't mistreat you for no one else. Tell me how can you do it? Tell me why did you do it? And how can you do it, girl? Treat your enemy. Tell me how can you do it? Tell me why did you do it? Tell me how can you do it? Tell me how can you do it, girl? Tell me how can you do it, girl? Treat me this way. How can you do that, woman? Yes, I'm loving you, baby, better than myself. I wouldn't mistreat you, but no one else. Tell me how can you do it? Tell me why did you do it? Tell me how can you do it, girl? Treat your enemy. Tell me how can you do it? Tell me why did you do it?
You've been listening to activist Lana Bogart from the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, ACORN, talk about her experience at a demonstration in Ottawa in front of Madeleine Meyer's office, and her interview with Madeleine Meyer in Toronto at Queen's Park.
The other thing that surprises me is that people like Meyer, when they talk about Ontario ending up like Greece, they haven't thought of the response of the public in Greece.
No.
I guess they think it can't happen here. But once it starts, it's going to be kind of hard to stop.
She threw in Greece and Spain and Portugal and Italy. She just all of a sudden started throwing all these countries at us and saying it's our fault, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't really sure what she was referring to unless she's talking about their social programs. But that's not why they're having problems.
Right.
You know.
No, they have a huge government public sector.
Yeah.
And they have enormous benefits compared to countries like us.
Mm-hmm.
And our civil servants have enormous benefits compared to the working poor. I mean, defined benefit pension plans are an anomaly in the private sector, but they're indexed to inflation. They're the norm for public servants.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, if they want to impose austerity on the rest of us, why they should enjoy benefits that the rest of us don't. Or, you know, turn that around, why we shouldn't enjoy benefits that they do. Why we shouldn't have defined benefit indexed pensions. So your efforts with Meyer basically came to naught, your efforts with the other chap?
Sir Nakvi?
Yeah, Sir Nakvi.
Yeah.
Were well received.
Yeah, they were very well received. Unfortunately, as you said, he's a backbencher. And
backbenchers are people with somewhere to go. The other people are just going to walk the plank at some point.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I had higher hopes for McGuinty, actually. I had higher hopes, but when he got in...
Oh, we all did.
You know, yeah.
I think we all have changed our minds.
Well, we also met with the NDP caucus.
Yeah.
When we were there, and Andrea Horvath, their leader, she actually went through all the points that we had and signed that she agreed. Yeah, we're losing the middle class, you know, and I think when people get poor enough, they start fighting back and they'll go out and vote, whereas a lot of them possibly don't vote on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You know, they'll just have had enough, you know, when you take the last bit of whatever they've got away from them.
Yeah. Well, the hope is, too, that by demoting the middle class, they demote people who have the ear of people who can defend
them.
Exactly. And effectively as well.
Yeah, whereas these people are mostly disadvantaged in that they really don't have anybody's ear.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, people who have any influence usually kind of look through them. As I think one of the people from the NDP was saying, that a lot of people from the other parties will go home, you know, they'll worry about the homeless, they'll worry about poverty, but they'll still sleep well at night. They'll still do whatever they do the next day, and, you know, it's not a major problem for them.
Yeah.
So
what's the brightest outlook that we have from this point forward? More demonstrations? More disruption, I'm afraid.
Yes, there's some people talking lawsuits. Some people who kept the letter that they received from the government stating, well, one lady had a letter that stated she would receive a special diet amount of $250 a month until she turned 65.
Yeah.
And she's 55 now, so she was saying 10 years of that's $30,000. She was going to take them to small claims court.
That's not a bad idea.
But actually, you know, whoever has their old letters that they received, I guess they could probably put together something because it's the same government.
Well, and the judges are empathetic.
It's not even a change of government. It's the same people that brought you that.
The judges are empathetic. They've heard the stories about people in the street. There's something else come up in January, which not a lot of lawyers and not a lot of people with disabilities are aware of. The McGuinty government gave people with disabilities a gift in the form of the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. And at the moment, it applies to public institutions, which include the Ministry of Community and Social Services. Unfortunately, it is supposed to be enforced by the Ministry of Community and Social Services. But the Ontario Human Rights Commission, where there is no conflict between its mandate and the AODA, will, if leaned upon, will pick up an AODA case. And the penalties for AODA cases are quite severe. The penalties are daily until the issue is resolved for the worker who imposes the penalty if it's if it amounts to a failure to provide services to someone with a disability. The penalty, I'm told, is $50,000 a day. A day. So they can kiss goodbye their house, their car, maybe their marriage, maybe with their marriage, their kids. The penalty for the ministry is $150,000 a day.
Wow.
But the problem is getting the human rights to enforce it, because the ministry is formally charged with enforcing it. And I don't. The saving grace is that the McGuinty government, if they decided to reverse the passage of this bill, is that they could be charged with failing to provide services to people with disabilities, and they could go for $150,000 a day until it's resolved.
Well, whoever, you know, the buck stops somewhere, you know, somebody's at fault for it.
Well, I think there are people in the McGuinty government who are empathetic. I couldn't find them. It'd be like a needle in a haystack. But there are people who are empathetic, or were empathetic, because this act would never have been enacted. Marie Montorgiani pushed the AODA forward and then resigned at the end of her term. I gather the Liberals were not too happy with the fact that she made this law. That's just speculation on my part. And so there are people there who are empathetic to people with disabilities. They just don't seem to have the levers of power.
Yeah. Well, to bring back the rates to like pre-1995 levels would be like a 50% increase right now.
Yeah.
You know, both for OW and OTSB.
Yeah.
You know, but they're certainly not thinking of doing that.
No, and unless you're a car company, you can't expect those kind of bucks.
No.
Yeah.
And even that would, I guess, basically bring people to a poverty level.
Yeah.
Because what is it? They pay, $585 a month. Got it written down here for Ontario Works, and $1042 on ODSB.
Well, it'd take you up into the high 800s on Ontario Works, which is no picnic at all. If you have to rent an apartment,
no,
and you have to feed yourself, and you have to get around. If you want meaningful input in society, it falls short because you can't afford it.
Yeah.
You can't afford to get around when you're still looking after your food and your clothing and other needs most of the time. For people on disabilities, it might be a little better, but they didn't lose 50%.
They lost, about 30%.
Yeah, so add a third onto 1,000, you get $1,333 a month. That's no picnic, too, but at least it's enough to survive.
Yeah. But it's livable. I mean.
But then you need things like the special diet and all the special supports for the things that particular disabilities won't allow you to do.
It's pathetic. My doctor told me to eat a banana every day, and I'm thinking, that's good for about a week to a month.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's pretty much it. It's pretty pathetic, and it's just a banana a day. But it adds up, and they're expensive. And
it's come right down to the where there's no give at all.
No, I mean, if you're paying market rent, you and you have to pay hydro, you have to.
Oh, which is going up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe Greece is the future. The riots, the conflict, the loss to the economy, and the disrespect for politicians is the future under Madeleine Meyer's version of providing for the disadvantaged. Let's hope that her version isn't the one that prevails.
Well, let's hope they don't balance the budget on the backs of the disadvantaged.
I don't think they can.
I don't think there's enough money in the pockets of the disadvantaged.
No, right. Well, thanks, Lana, for your time and your insight.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and thanks to Acorn for providing this audience and this insight for all of us.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to activist Lana Bogart from the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, Acorn, talk about her experience at a demonstration in Ottawa in front of Madeleine Meyer's office, and her interview with Madeleine Meyer in Toronto at Queen's Park. And now for Disrespect's weekly review of the news. Remember, these are not the full stories. These are abridgments of the stories that we read to you, and the full stories can be found in the newspapers that we announced during the broadcast. Toronto Star, British Columbia, Anti-HST petition hits target, ex-premier says. Former Premier Bill VanderZaam says a province-wide petition against the harmonized sales tax has reached its target weeks ahead of schedule. VanderZaam, who is leading the Fight HST campaign, said the petition has collected the signatures of at least 10% of the registered voters in each of the province's 85 ridings as of last Friday. If Elections BC confirms that the petition has enough valid signatures, the document will be forwarded to a legislature committee, which will decide whether to table a bill for a vote or hold a referendum. Joanna Frickitich, Hamilton Spectator. Hamilton's family doctor shortage appears to be impacting the treatment of chronic disease. Area residents are hospitalized for chronic illnesses such as diabetes, asthma, and high blood pressure, more than the provincial or national average, found a report by the Canadian Institute for Health Information, or CIHI. Those conditions are usually managed in the community with the help of a family doctor. The report shows the Hamilton Niagara Haldimand Brandt Local Health Integration Network, which includes Burlington, is definitely short family doctors. In direct contrast to the weaknesses in treating chronic conditions, this area was found to do a good job at caring for acute patients. The family doctor shortage is likely a big factor in patients with chronic conditions ending up in hospitals. But Hamilton's socioeconomic challenges also play a factor, such as poverty, obesity, poor nutrition, and smoking. A report by Cancer Care Ontario shows this area has among the highest exposure in the province to secondhand smoke, with 20 to 25% of people breathing it in while at home, in the car, or in public places. Said Dr. David Price, who heads family medicine at McMaster University and Hamilton Health Sciences, no matter how good you are as a family physician, if there is not adequate resources for that individual to live, the impact of their chronic disease is greater. We've got a situation in Hamilton that needs to be addressed. And from the Metro News, May 28th to 30th, weekend edition. Report: more heart attacks among low earners. Canadians who live in low-income neighborhoods are more likely to have a heart attack than their wealthier counterparts. But in terms of how they fare when they get to hospital, their quality of care appears to be about the same, says the report released by the Canadian Institute for Health Information. The report says the risk of dying in hospital within 30 days was about the same in all socioeconomic groups, averaging 8.3%. However, the most affluent patients were 7% more likely to have a procedure such as angioplasty or bypass surgery. Province may curb free drugs for seniors. Toronto Star, Rob Ferguson, Queen's Park Bureau. Ontario is open to tinkering with drug co-payments for seniors and others on taxpayer-funded pharmacare programs, Health Minister Deb Matthews says. Doctors could also see more efforts to nudge them from a fee-for-service payment model to salaries, said a TD Bank report warning of the serious fiscal challenges facing Medicare. Half of government spending on drugs goes to seniors with higher incomes, and the report suggested the wealthiest seniors get no drug coverage, an idea Matthews flatly rejected. But while the minister said taxpayer-funded drugs for seniors, the disabled, and welfare recipients would continue under a Liberal government, co-payments for seniors could change based on their income levels. Under the current system, senior citizens with incomes above $16,000 and $18 a year and couples with a combined income above $24,175 a year now pay their first $100 in prescription costs and after that may pay up to the maximum of $6.11 in dispensing fees for each prescription. Seniors with incomes below those levels may be asked to pay up to $2 for each prescription. The TD report called for bold changes because at the current rate of growth, healthcare costs would eat up 80% of the government's program spending by 2030, compared with 46% now and 30% in the 1990s. Doctors should be paid more on a salary basis instead of on a fee-for-service basis, said the TD report by well-known economists Don Drummond and Derek Burleton. Matthews pointed out that many doctors on family health teams and in hospital emergency rooms are now on salary. Speaking for doctors, the Ontario Medical Association President, Dr. Mark McLeod, said in a statement, he welcomes a public debate on reforming the system while protecting the interests of patients. And from Andre Picard, second opinion in the Globe and Mail, dirty dealing. Ontario has been negotiating secretive, or if you prefer, non-transparent deals with pharmaceutical companies in exchange for listing their drugs on the Ontario Drug Benefit Formulary. In Canada, new drugs are approved, or not, by Health Canada, and prices are set by a federal agency. There is also an agency called the Common Drug Review that makes recommendations in the hope that the provinces will have similar policies. Prices of brand name drugs are regulated by the Patented Medicine Prices Review Board. Government drug plans can negotiate discounts for bulk purchases, a power they do not exercise nearly often enough. But Ontario is doing something else entirely. It's demanding that brand name manufacturers discount the prices set by the Prices Review Board or see their drug excluded from its formulary. Drugs such as Fosavance and Ciprolex were rejected by the Provincial Committee to Evaluate Drugs, but subsequently placed on the formulary after a, quote, pricing agreement, unquote. The appropriate name for this practice is a kickback. Since the long-standing secretive practice was exposed earlier this year by Globe and Mail columnist Adam Radwanski, there's been much political fallout. The Quebec government is furious because it has a deal with brand-name manufacturers that it will pay the lowest price in Canada for drugs, not just the lowest published price. Quebec, the home base of most of big drug companies in Canada, has a rule that its drug plan will pay for brand-name drugs for 15 years after a generic is listed, a gift worth about $120 million annually to Big Pharma. The Patented Medicines Prices Review Board obviously is not too happy. It sued one company, Pfizer, to get information on its deal with the Ontario government, but the courts ruled the information was proprietary. The province seems happy to keep all this hush-hush. Instead of wailing on pharmacists, perhaps the Ontario government should be turning some of its scrutiny and its anger inward, because some of its drug policies are, frankly, malodorous. And from Lisa Grace Marr in Saturday, May 22nd, Spectator. Be prepared for electric shock. New time-of-use charges based on smart meter readings, coupled with an Ontario Energy Board increase of $5.78 for Horizon customers, are being loaded onto bills this spring. We all know electricity prices are going up, said Shelley Parker, Acting Director of Customer Services at Horizon Utilities. The government is trying to encourage residential customers to use electricity at off-peak times when commercial usage is lower. Horizon Utilities does acknowledge some customers in Hamilton and St. Catharines may see an increase if they do not adjust their usage patterns to time-of-use peaks. This is on top of expected rate hikes on November 1st, when the Ontario Energy Board is expected to raise electricity rates again to offset the costs of new green technologies and infrastructure and other costs. In addition, Ontario Power Generation has applied to the Ontario Energy Board for a $2.75 a month rate increase for 2 years for all Ontario residents. If approved, the new rate would start in January 2011. Lawrence Solomon, Executive Director of Energy Probe, said Ontario consumers should brace themselves. He expects rates will soon double or even triple due to a, quote, misguided attempt to stop climate change, unquote. Ontario is following the path of the UK, where power rates climbed rapidly to combat a presumed climate change, said Solomon. As a result, millions were thrown into what is known there as fuel poverty. Tom Cooper, director of the Hamilton Roundtable for Poverty Reduction, points out that the new smart meters do not help low-income families who might live in an apartment building equipped with old appliances, an old furnace, or old windows. He said the HST, in effect on July 1st, compounds the impact. Alicia Johnston, a spokesperson for Ontario Finance Minister Dwight Duncan, said the government is introducing a new energy property and sales tax credit to help low- and middle-income families adjust to the harmonized sales tax. The HST and the increase in costs, such as electricity. Now let's take a break with Big Jack Johnson, Too Many Drivers.
Pretty car. Hey, baby, let me ride in your pretty car. You got a cool looking car, baby, but you got too many drivers under your wheel. One driver in the daytime, two drivers at night. Ain't no three drivers gonna treat your little car right. Hey, baby, in your pretty car. You got a cool little car, baby, but you got too many drivers under your wheel.
From the Toronto Star, Laurie Monsalbrotten, social justice reporter. Homeless launch charter challenge. Federal and Ontario governments violate equality rights, they say. Single mother Jennifer Tanujaja's two-bedroom apartment near Kipling and Finch costs $9.97 a month, but her monthly welfare check is just $9.35. That means she's forced to live on children's benefits she receives for her two young sons. Brian Dubourdieu, 48, who became homeless after a cancer diagnosis 5 years ago, lived in a shack by the Don River for 4 years until it burned down last spring. The cheapest apartment he could find in newspaper ads Wednesday was renting for $6.80 a month, almost twice the shelter allowance of $364 he would get on welfare. Tanujaja and Dubourdieu are among four homeless and formerly homeless residents who say Ottawa and Queen's Park are violating the Canadian Charter of Rights by creating and maintaining conditions that lead to and sustain homelessness and inadequate housing. Their legal challenge calls on Ontario Superior Court to order the federal and provincial governments to implement effective housing strategies to reduce homelessness and substandard living conditions. Tanujaja, 19, who has just completed her first year of college and has dreams of going to university and becoming a parole officer, became homeless at age 14 when she ran away from her Children's Aid Society group home. But since becoming a mother 3 years ago, she's determined to turn her life around. "It's very tight," she said. "Every month I fear that I won't be able to pay the rent and that my sons and I will end up in a homeless shelter." The court challenge claims that homelessness and inadequate housing violate human rights under sections of the Charter that guarantee security of the person and the right to equality. A 2009 study by St. Michael's Hospital researcher Stephen Huang found that precariously housed people have higher mortality rates than those with stable housing. Globe and Mail, Kate Hammer, education reporter. Schools lack access to mental health services. A report released by a parent advocacy group, compiled by People for Education and based on a survey of Ontario principals, found that less than half of the province's secondary schools have regular access to psychologists and youth workers. The report showed that the incidence rate of mental health disorders has climbed to include between 15 and 21% of students. The numbers echo a 2009 report by the Canadian Pediatric Society that found that children's mental health services are already overextended and that the incidence of mental health problems is expected to grow 50% by 2020. Services remain scarce in the northern parts of the province, where one-third of schools have no access to a school psychologist. The discrepancy between the GTA and the North is scary, said Gordon Floyd, president and CEO of Children's Mental Health Ontario. According to Annie Kidder, executive director of People for Education and an author of the report, "We're not saying schools should be the providers of every single support service, but they should provide the link for where parents can go." In Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, where the school boards have partnered with Algoma Family Services to put addiction counselors in every high school, one school for at-risk youth, split the cost of a mental health coordinator with the community group and the board, and found that within months the suspension rates went down while attendance went up. Metro News once more, weekend, May 28th to 30th. Mayors call out feds on housing funds. For decades, the federal government has been paying between $1.6 billion and $1.8 billion a year to subsidize mortgages and operating costs for affordable housing units. But the subsidy agreements are gradually expiring. It's slowly ending, confirmed Ryan Sparrow, spokesman for Human Resources Minister Diane Finley. He stressed that Ottawa has other programs that are investing billions on building new affordable housing units and retrofitting old ones. He said the main reason Ottawa is allowing the subsidies to expire is because that responsibility was handed over to the provinces. But social housing advocates and municipal governments say they are alarmed at the quiet cuts. If the federal housing subsidies are allowed to expire, that would end up being a disaster, said Anne-Marie DeCiso Best, the mayor of London, Ontario. At stake, 200,000 units that are home to the poorest of Canada's poor, says consultant Steve Pomeroy, who's advising the Federation of Canadian Municipalities. Federal funding ramped up in the 1970s to provide support for 35-year mortgages. The thinking at the time was that when the mortgages were paid off, the tenant's rent would be enough to cover the operating costs. That's true for about 400,000 units that house people with a mixed range of income, says Pomeroy, but not for the 200,000 older units that target the poorest of the pool, poorest of the poor, or urban Aboriginal people. And letters to the editor. This from David Wiseman, Faculty of Law, University of Ottawa. We've tried to get in touch with Mr. Wiseman, but the University of Ottawa doesn't seem to list any contact for him. Guaranteeing affordable housing would cost a lot of money, but all charter rights cost money. The point of the case is that money spent now on affordable housing is money not spent later on child poverty, health care, and prisons. After 28 years of virtual silence on the charter and housing, it would be anachronistic for Canadian courts not to define a role for themselves. And we'll be seeing more on the cost of charter rights and the violation of those rights to save costs in upcoming weeks on Disrespect. Nelson Reese in Ottawa, letters to the editor in the Globe. An aging elephant in the room. Soon seniors will outnumber children. Debate on the impact this will have in our already stressed healthcare system has begun in earnest. A major cost that has been overlooked, however, is long-term care. Governments don't begin to meet the need now, let alone when the baby boomers enter retirement in droves. The shock families experience when they learn that they must cover home care and facility care costs, which can easily register in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, is widespread. It's time to add this growing and vital issue to the debate. And from the Globe and Mail, Friday, May 28th, by Jeffrey York in Johannesburg, Africa. A study in The Lancet in April estimated that AIDS is responsible for 61,000 of the 350,000 annual deaths worldwide of women in childbirth or pregnancy. The impact is harshest in Africa, causing a rise in maternal deaths in eastern and southern Africa, even as most other parts of the world are seeing a decline. What's being proposed is to take resources from HIV and give them to maternal health, but you cannot separate the two because it's the same patient, said Mitt Phillips, health policy analyst at Médecins Sans Frontières. Donors seem to be losing interest in the fight against AIDS. While donors are capping or reducing their funds for AIDS, the number of people needing medicine has increased sharply as new guidelines for treatments are introduced. Across the world, barely one-third of the 14 million people with HIV have access to the medicine they need. In countries with high HIV rates, you can't do anything to improve maternal health unless you tackle HIV, Ms. Phillips said. Julio Montaner, a Vancouver scientist who heads the International AIDS Society, said the AIDS virus is still the leading global killer of women of reproductive age. In many African countries, about 30% of women of reproductive age have the virus, he said. There will be no success in maternal and child health unless the G8 delivers on HIV/AIDS treatment, he said. And from the good news in the life section of the Globe, sensitive screenings for autistic kids. Kids watching Fiery Spitballs in How to Train Your Dragon are bound to get hyped up, but south of the border, select theaters are offering screenings of the blockbuster designed for sensory underload. The house lights are dimmed but stay on. The volume is kept low. No ads or previews are allowed to blare at the target audience, autistic children. Sensory-friendly films launched a year ago and now in 30 U.S. states are a boon for families dealing with special needs, notes Time.com. The kids can jump up and down if they're agitated, yell at the screen, eat snacks brought from home, and even stroll the aisles. Sounds like a good formula for average kids, too. And that's the news this week for Disrespect. Come back next week. There will be more. To take us out, Jimmy Thackeray and The Stumble. If you can't access a Disrespect broadcast, you can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.